This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
What are some of the most common misconceptions about Weatherby?
Just to be perfectly honest, I'm not much of a basher and going to a bunch of negative things. It just wasn't a great place to manufacture things, let alone firearms and ammunition. It's the same thing my grandpa did in the 40s and 50s. It's just with a new era of technology. It's hard to make, it's expensive to make, but it's strong as heck. It's a great action. You know, you just got to pay a little bit more for it. So we don't take that lightly, but it means, stop me if I miss something, Ron. I do know this. It can help, not cure, but it can help with an improperly placed shot. But at the same time, point fingers at them, but I go, hey, until you've been in their shoes, you don't know everything that took place. And Roy wouldn't like that carbon fiber stock. Or Roy wouldn't like this cartridge. Well, Roy was a businessman too.
Hello, everyone. Say, I have been wondering lately about cartridges and ammunition and its availability and new cartridges, as many of you are as well, because you write and tell me as much. Why is it that there are so many different cartridges popping up when the industry doesn't seem to be able to fill orders for traditional cartridges? What exactly is going on? And I thought I would go to a source. This might not be the source, but somebody inside the industry who actually makes ammunition and might have answers to these questions and a lot more about pressures and high-velocity ammo, and exactly where our cartridge designs are going in the 21st century. And this is someone who's been involved, or his family has been involved, since about 1945, if you like to go way back. And if some of you are getting an idea of who we might be talking about today, well, it's Weatherby. And this is the third generation family member owner of Weatherby, Adam Weatherby. Adam, welcome to Ron Spoomer Outdoors Podcast.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be on here today.
Well, we are excited to ask you some pointed questions about ammunition and Weatherby and all the rest of it. And I'm sure that everyone and anyone out there listening knows the name Weatherby, and I think it's associated with more or less high-end rifles, but pretty powerful rifles, because Weatherby has always been the velocity champ. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. And it's funny, you know, we're known for our rifles, but I think, like you and I were talking earlier, when my grandfather started this company, it was based off high velocity, what he saw as ballistic superiority. In fact, it was, you know, when you say, hey, what's the problem he solved? He went on a mule deer hunt, injured a deer, stayed awake all night thinking we got to provide more killing power, and started fire forming cases. And the rest was history, where he just said, hey, speed kills. And I'm here almost 80 years later because he had that kind of mindset and philosophy in the 40s. And that's kind of the foundation of our company, is high speed, for sure.
High speed. Yeah. Are you sticking with it with your new developments?
We are. You know, we have with our RPM cases, we have two rebated precision Magnum. I think you've done some videos and films on that I've seen as well. They're not traditional for Weatherby. They don't have a belted, You know, there's no belt at the bottom. There's no traditional rounded shoulder. So we are getting away. Now, those were purpose-driven for our smaller Mark V six-lug action to really provide Magnum performance in like a five-pound rifle. So it's kind of a niche for sure. But, you know, we still have things like the 3378 and 338-378, 65-300, a lot of real fast ones that are out there. But we have strayed a little bit and diversified a little bit into some different purpose-driven cartridges along the way.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, if you want to capture market, you want to provide what your buyers want. If folks want a certain caliber,
yes,
you're going to probably make something. And if they want velocities and speeds,
yep,
or these days it's fast twist barrels and longer, more efficient, aerodynamically efficient bullets, right?
Correct. And obviously bullet development over our history has come so far. And so, yeah, you're talking high BCs, faster twist rates, shorter barrels are real trendy right now as well, which is hard for us because, you know, people are wanting to put a suppressor on there. I've certainly been hunting with that, but you do sacrifice speed more on different cartridges than others. But, and there's a lot of people trying to kind of hop in the game and figure it all out. And if you didn't grow up with this kind of stuff, like maybe you or I did, Ron, it can be a confusing, twisted game to get in the midst of all this stuff.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's why people are complaining, I think, about new cartridges. They haven't figured out the old ones yet. And then there get to be so many with similar names and numbers and all the rest of it. And I always say that's just a part of the game. You know, if you're into golf, you understand the terminology and the clubs and the numbers and everything. It's the same with hunting. You just have to jump in and get started.
Exactly.
Now, I want to go back to the high-pressure thing because there are a lot of misconceptions about Weatherby cartridges. Back from when I was a boy in the late 50s and early 60s, everyone would say Weatherby, and we'd all think, my gosh, this is the world's most powerful, fastest cartridge. They're so powerful, they have to have an extra belt of brass around the base of them to hold all that pressure in.
Sure.
So obviously, you know where I'm going with this. Could you tell everybody about the design of the original Roy Weatherby Magnum cartridges? And did they have so much more pressure than other cartridges that they needed a belt on them?
No. You know, really, it's a lot about case capacity and how much powder you're going to fit in that thing. And so, you know, originally when he was taking some of the H&H cases and different things and fireforming them in the early years, before he really started making brass, he went to Norma in about 1959 or 1960. So it wasn't for about 15 years that he was really, you know, producing in mass quantities any sort of our brass. But it was really about case capacity. I mean, you look at the 257 Weatherby developed there in the early to mid 40s, and, you know, you have, you know, a larger, you know, belted case, certainly, but a lot of case capacity, a lot of powder capacity, but neck down to that little 25 cal bullet. And at the end of the day, even for pressures, you know, we have SAMI, our industry, if people aren't familiar with it, kind of our industry organization that helps us align and keep things safe out there. You know, we maintain all of our loading within SAMI pressure. And so hand loaders will get it and say, well, they can do a little bit more, but, you know, when we're mass producing it, we keep it within SAMI pressure, but it's really a lot about case capacity. You know, the rounded shoulder that my grandfather had, you know, sure, was it a little bit more case capacity? You know, as far as the way that it chambered and different things, there were certainly some differences. A lot of it was about a different look. My grandpa was also, not only was he an innovator, he was a genius marketer. And I love to say that's how I'm here today, is you have some people that can invent stuff, but they can't sell it to anybody. You have some people that can sell stuff, but they can't come up with anything original. My grandfather had both. And a lot of his case development and even then rifle development, when he came into the high-end wood stocks, the Monte Carlo cheek piece and the diamond, a lot of that was to say, I got something real cool and you're going to look good doing it too. And so it was really a combination of both in the early years.
Yeah, he was just adept at that. Everything, you know, starting off with designing the cartridges, getting those velocities, and then marketing it and coming up with, well, he moved to where was he starting out in? Back in Kansas or Tennessee or someplace? And then he moved to California?
Well, he's from Kansas, but he didn't start any of this until he moved to California in the early 40s. But he was born in 1910 in Kansas is when he was born.
Okay. So he's in California. I mean, it's a smart move. They called it, the Weatherby style was also known as the California style. And back in the 40s and 50s, into the 60s, this was racy stuff. Everybody was into speed and racy angles and stuff. And his designs, I think, reflected that. But they were also effective. His gun stocks just didn't look fancy and racy. They actually controlled recoil pretty well.
They did. It was the whole thing. And it really, you know, next year will be our 80th year. In those first 15 years, he developed a legacy brand. And it really was about, like you said, up till from 45 to 60, his trips to Africa proving his cartridges. You know, he was friends with all the Hollywood, you know, John Wayne, Roy Rogers, and Gary Cooper. He had his unique look. He had the performance, the accuracy, the velocity. And that was really in those first 15 years, it got established. And all my dad and I have been trying to do, you know, the next 70 years is not screw up what he started. So.
But you guys are now venturing out, as we mentioned earlier. You've got the newly designed cartridges that don't have the double Venturi shoulders and such. And you're offering different looks to your stocks that are not all the racy 1960 style that your grandpa had. So you guys are innovating and sort of putting your own brand on it now. Are you feel like this is an important part of your ongoing legacy or the legacy that you are?
You'd think with four of us spread out on a tiny island that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Oh, that's awesome!
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Building.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think people, you know, it's funny how many people we have say, well, Roy wouldn't like that carbon fiber stock. Roy wouldn't like this cartridge. Well, Roy was a businessman too. When my dad came out with really the first fiberglass stock in the industry in 1983, my grandpa said, that's the ugliest thing. You're never going to sell any of them. Well, then as soon as we sold a bunch, my grandpa liked fiberglass stock. So there's an element to it where what my grandpa did in the 40s and 50s, it was turning things on its head. It was different. Well, you fast forward, you have to stay up to innovate and do different things now. You have to do things. If we just had the original Mark V Deluxe and that's all we had, well, I wouldn't be in this giant facility with all these employees. It'd be me and five guys out in a wood shop. And so we have to grow. And with that comes new technology. You know, we have a folding carbon fiber stock, but it enables us to go further, faster, longer back into the backcountry. You know, we have a lot of different technologies that we're able to integrate. And I would like to say it's the same thing my grandpa did in the 40s and 50s. It's just with a new era of technology. So we're trying to innovate and do things different now, just as he did then. It just looks different.
Yeah. Well, it also performs a little bit differently too. You're not just making things so that they look different. It's practical applications. You mentioned backcountry. Your rifles these days are way lighter than the rifles from Weatherby were back in the 50s and 60s.
Correct. We're actually making our carbon fiber stocks in-house here in Sheridan, Wyoming at our facility from scratch. We've designed it and we set out to say we want to make the lightest, strongest stock. We have a 20-ounce rifle stock that will withhold several thousand rounds of a 300 Weatherby and not crack a darn thing. And so, you know, I mean, I love wood stocks. I was in Africa 2 years ago. I took this high-end classic Weatherby one, kind of an ode to the past, and my grandpa'd be so proud. I show up, I'm in Namibia. It's a high-end stock, special kind of Africa laser checkering on it. And we say, well, let's go sight in our guns. So I pick up the rifle that's in a soft case with a leather strap with those brass pins. You know, the ones I'm talking about. I sling it on my shoulder the brass pin falls out. So the rifle goes back like this, lands on its muzzle. And I cracked my stock in half on the first day of the hunt. And I went, this is why I make carbon fiber stocks, because it happens, you know? So,
that doesn't mean that you don't still sell good looking walnut stocks, right?
We do.
Yeah, and, because I was good.
We do both.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I have been slinging with leather slings, walnut stocked rifles over my shoulder like that for all my life, and I haven't snapped any of them off yet. So that was a fluke for sure.
It was.
Well, now when you said you were making some new lightweight rifles and stuff, I asked myself the question, how light are they?
Sure. We have some that are 4.5 to 4.75 pounds. So we have some right under 5 pounds that we can fit our 6.5 RPM or 338 RPM in and get what we call magnum velocity. You know, if people know the 6.5 PRC, if you're not familiar with the RPM, it'd be similar velocities, but that 6.5 PRC has a magnum bolt face. The RPM has a standard 473 diameter standard bolt face. We're able to put that in a rifle that tips just under 5 pounds with a 24-inch barrel. So a lot of guys are saving weight by lobbing off barrel, but you're losing velocity, or maybe you're 6.5 Creedmoor, but we're talking magnum velocities, 24-inch barrel, and a sub-5-pound rifle. We make titanium actions here in-house. That's using titanium, and it's using carbon fiber, obviously, as well for the stock in order to achieve those things. So it's fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's pretty nice because not only do you have the velocity you need in a smaller or lighter bolt face, like you mentioned, you know, so many of us keep focusing on short action. It's got to be short action. You save some weight. You're saving weight with a standard length action because of the bolt size. So there are different ways to skin this cat, and I think you've proved it with that.
Yeah.
And then you end up with pretty weatherproof rifles too for a country like Alaska.
Exactly. And so one of the unique things is in our Mark V action that my grandpa developed in 1958 with the 9 locking lugs, and you know it handles the 460 Weatherby. Well, years later, we designed and developed a 6-lug action. It's still long. Everybody always thinks long and short in most other action types like a 700. The Mark V, we have 2 long actions. It's in a fat and a skinny. And our 6-lug has that standard bolt face, but it's still long. And so that's why that 6.5 RPM is a rebated rim with the standard bolt face so it can fit in there, but it's a long, skinny cartridge. So we're still able to get some good powder capacity, but put it in a very slim, lightweight rifle.
Now, that just reminded me, the 6.5 RPM was based off the 284 Winchester rebated rim case. Is that right? And then you stretched it?
Yep, we called it internally for a while the 284 stretch or the 6.5 284 stretch, if you took that. So it the bottom part of it still is exactly the same, and then we just added on brass. So it is a new parent cartridge. It's, you know, you got to have, even for making brass, your cup sizes, all those things. It's a brand new parent case that we made. Took it in the 6.5 RPM, and then a couple years later, put it in the 338 RPM that, as you noted on your film that I saw, is just about 338 Win Mag velocities, but on a standard bolt face.
Yeah, that's nice. That's kind of innovation I think Weatherby has been famous for ever since Grandpa started it. So I think you're keeping up the family tradition here. Now, as I mentioned at the start of this, you're third generation. So it was Roy, your dad was Ed, and then you came along, took over the company roughly, what, 2017 or something?
January of 2017. Not bad, Ron. You are a good historian.
Well, so you've been at it long enough now. And now, were you responsible for moving the company to Sheridan out of California?
Correct. One of the first things, probably even back before I officially took over as CEO, but kind of in that co-role with my dad from, say, 2014 to 2017, I began to look at really the next generation. And what became clear to me is that California had a very rich history. We already discussed that. And our business is very thankful for that. It did not present a vibrant future for us. And so it was real clear in about 2014, 2015, I started looking at other states. My dad knew that, but he was more towards the end of his career. He'd been doing it for several decades. Let me tell you, it takes a lot of energy to move a factory, to move employees, and to start all over. And I don't ever want to do it again. But when we started to look, my wife and I really just said, hey, if we're going to keep continuing this family legacy, it ain't going to be here anymore. It's just changed too much. And I don't want to, I'm not much of a basher and go into a bunch of negative things. People know that, it just wasn't a great place to manufacture things, let alone firearms and ammunition here in the 21st century. And so we started looking at some other states. We wanted to stay out west because we felt that was just our roots, both from our products, our hunting, where we grew up. And so, you know, we looked at about a half a dozen Western states, and we kind of wrote off Wyoming originally. I just thought, golly, all there are is like antelope and elk and a bunch of animals, and there's like five people. And I'd like, how are we going to hire a workforce and actually do business? And I met then Governor Matt Mead. We formed a friendship. And between him and the Wyoming Business Council and the local economic development here in Sheridan, Wyoming, it just ended up being a match made in heaven. It has been, I'll tell you what, we doubled the size of our 75-year-old business in the first 3 years after being set up in Wyoming. So that's how good it was for us.
Yeah. So you had to make a whole new plant and move all your equipment out there. And I mean, this is big equipment. You don't manufacture guns with little hand tools anymore. You've got these giant CNC machines and stuff, right?
Correct. And really what part of it was too, though, is we had to outsource so many things to different sub-suppliers in California because we couldn't afford to do it there. Between labor and the cost of, you know, doing business there, keeping the lights on. I mean, when we moved to Wyoming, we doubled the size of our facility and our power bill was five times less. So
wow.
You start to add that up over all the elements of the business. So we had to sub everything out. When we moved here, part of our strategy, and my strategy, was really to vertically integrate and bring more manufacturing back in-house. So one of the things we were able to do was invest in a lot of new state-of-the-art equipment after moving into a new state-of-the-art facility. And that really set us up for our growth.
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You've got new machinery and might as well make some new designs, new rifles. Now are you're making all of your rifles in-house there in Sheridan now, right?
The 307 and the Model 307, which was new here this last year, and the Mark V, we do predominantly most things. We still do, I mean, there's a lot of parts that go into a rifle. They're all U.S. built and largely done here in Sheridan, Wyoming. For instance, our barrels were contouring, chambering, threading, doing all that work here in-house. We're manufacturing our titanium receivers, doing a lot of bolt finishing, making the stocks. But we do sub out some things depending on what it is to other U.S. partners that we've had really for decades in a lot of cases. And then our Vanguard rifle, the barreled action itself is still made in Japan as it's been since 1971. But we actually bring it here and we do fluting of barrels and threading of muzzles, all our Cerakoting, stock work, and final assembly here in Sheridan.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
Wyoming on that product.
Okay, now, just to clear up a little confusion here, we're mentioning Mark V rifles, 9-bolt and 6-lug bolts, and then we've got Vanguard popping up at 307. Kiss, run down the line for me. Let's do it chronologically. What came first?
Mark V was in 1958. Original design, never been knocked off. It's hard to make. It's expensive to make, but it's strong as heck. It's got a 54-degree bolt lift. Comes in those two action sizes that I mentioned earlier. And those are things that we predominantly do here in Sheridan, Wyoming, still have that in our line. It's our flagship. It's our top tier. It's not cost effective to machine. In 1958, they didn't have CNC machines. And so it's highly inefficient to make, but it's a great action. You just got to pay a little bit more for it. So in 1971, my grandfather partnered in Japan to come out with a more affordable product, or Weatherby Vanguard, which has been around since 71, same factory, has hammer forged barrels, great guns, still sub-em away guarantee, but those are sub-$1,000, retail guns, where our Mark V starts more at $1,500, say in the retail range. The Vanguard is more starting at maybe $600 or something like that. And, a lot of guns in the $800 range, things like that. Okay.
And that Vanguard is a 2-lug, 90-degree bolt lift?
Yes. Yep, 2-lug, 90-degree bolt lift, correct. And so we still, like I said, are doing those today and selling a lot of them, actually.
Do you mostly chamber those in traditional cartridges rather than Weatherby Magnums?
We do both, but our percentage, say, in Mark Vs of Weatherby Magnum cartridges is much higher than our percentage of them in the Vanguard, largely due to ammunition cost and efficiency for loading and all those things, where we sell a lot of 6.5 Creedmoors and 300 Winds and 7 REMs and 243s in the Vanguard, you know?
Yeah. Then what about this 307, this new rifle?
Yeah. A lot of people would say, okay, why the heck did you come up with a third? You already got two bolt action rifles. Why a third? And why the Model 307? First of all, 307 is our area code for the entire state of Wyoming. So it was Wyoming proud that we'd come out with that. Second, the numbers we say each have a representation where it's our third rifle action. There's the three. It's built on a 700 footprint. There's the seven, meaning that you can use aftermarket accessories from triggers to stocks to bases and rings and so forth on the top.
Got it. Yeah.
There's really nothing for the zero, but we always say at the end it's zero because there's nothing else like it. But it's our take on the 700. And the reason we did it was a few different reasons. One, the Mark V and Vanguard are more closed system, meaning other than the HOA 1500 sharing the same footprint and everything as the Weatherby Vanguard, there's not a lot of other aftermarket things if people are wanting to trick out their guns in different ways. Mark V is one of a kind, same thing. There's a lot of people where the 700 platform, if you would, in the last, especially even just the last decade, a lot of new gun makers, custom gun makers, a lot of companies that have really grown have used that platform, and it's become much of what the AR has to the semi-auto world in making it where guys are like, cool, I'm going to build up a custom gun. I'm going to put a carbon fiber barrel or a heavy contour steel barrel, chassis, you name it. And so we didn't have anything in that space. And so it was also in between on a price point where our 307 starts more at $1,000 to $1,100. So it was also a middle tier for a price point. And it also was really going after a new customer that maybe had said, you know, I don't want to go after those closed systems. I want something a little bit more like this. Maybe some people that aren't even, you know, most of us are hunters maybe first and shooters second, you know, that we're just passionate hunters and guns come into it. Where the 307's also geared towards a lot of people who really want to spend a lot of range time and get those aftermarket accessories. So it was really branching out. We did design it here in-house in Sheridan. Our engineers did. The bolt's a very unique design. It's actually a toolless takedown on the bolt. And so we used an M16 style extractor, kind of the larger bases on top. We took what a lot of custom 700 gun makers are doing, and we put that into, I don't want to say mass production because we fall in the middle. It's production. Our sweet spot is we try to offer custom features at a production price where we're still Weatherby, we're top shelf, but it's not a $10,000 rifle by any means. And so we've really kind of packaged that in with the new Model 307, Ron.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that gives us something to build on in the future. I think that's probably a pretty smart move from you guys. Have you paid any attention to what seems to be popping up now is this replaceable barrels? You build your actions with your head spacing so well defined that you can make an aftermarket barrel and drop it right into that rifle. So it makes it easier to swap barrels. You don't necessarily have to go through a gunsmith. I'm sure you're aware of that. Are these 307 actions going to be set up for that at some point?
Correct. It is. There are a lot more different designs out there for sure on that. We are offering a custom builder's action. It's actually on our website too, because we know that guys are using that. And so obviously the recoil lug, it is where both our Vanguard and Mark V also, by the way, have an integral recoil lug. This is a separate recoil lug, and therefore the head spacing can be made off of that recoil lug. And
gotcha.
So we have all the dimensions and different things and stuff like that that's online, and the specs are on there for our custom builder action.
Yeah, you're looking ahead to the future.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to clear up some misconceptions about Weatherby that I've had over the years. Most of those have been cleared up by talking to folks like your dad and you.
Yeah.
But not everybody gets to meet you guys at your shows and talk to you. So what are some of the most common misconceptions about Weatherby as a brand, ammunition, rifles, anything that you guys hear most often?
Mm. Yeah. Well, you could probably answer better because I'm on the inside for sure. But, you know, I think... one of the things that I tried to do, just like my dad did following my grandfather, was you really have to, with an older brand, you have to rebrand and redefine yourself over the generations. And so where a lot of people for a long time thought all Weatherbys were expensive, they're all wood stocks, you know, they're and didn't understand that there's a whole new generation and line of things that were in there. And so we've spent a lot of time and money and different creative ways to really rebrand ourselves. Just like look at an automobile maker. You look at anything. I mean, any brand that's been around a long time, they have to constantly do that and kind of rebrand themselves. Or they think everything we chamber is in a large Weatherby Magnum cartridge that's, you know, burning barrels out. Well, yeah. We sell more Creedmoors probably than anything else. You know, now do I go hunt with them? Absolutely not. But but we still do sell a lot of that. So, you know, there's a lot of different elements to different things. You know, another funny thing is misconception is people think we only make rifles. We sell a lot of shotguns as well. And so that's another big part of our business too. We have over and unders, side by sides, semi-autos, you know, in our line. So, you know, I think people look to what we originally were and they pigeonhole themselves in there and don't understand the expanse, you know, of the line generations later.
Sure, sure. Now, some of the myths that I heard growing up, one you've already mentioned was the price and they're heavy rifles. The Mark V is a beefy, heavy action. As you said, it's built to withstand a 460. And then the belt thing was, no, that belt doesn't hold in any extra pressures. That's there for head spacing and all the rest of that. That's been pretty well cleared up. But what about pressures? I still think there are a lot of folks who think there must be some incredible chamber pressures in these cartridges, but you guys don't go over 65,000 PSI in any of them, do you?
Absolutely not. No, everything is between 60 and 65 for the most part speaking. And that's to SAMI spec. So, I mean, you can get online, Google the cartridge, SAMI specifications. And we do most all of our loading in-house on all of our premium ammunition. So we're loading all the, you know, any premium bullet that we load, whether that be, you know, whether that be a Barnes bullet, whether that be a Hornady bullet, we're loading Hammer now, we have Swift, all the different bullets. We're loading it in-house. We do lot testing, both at the beginning, throughout it. We stop our machines. We have pressure and velocity barrels. Universal transducers down. We got two underground ranges in our brand new facility, a 300 yard and a 100 yard. 300's used a lot for accuracy, but the 100's used almost exclusively for ammo development, for ballistics, and for all of our pressure and velocity P&V testing that we do. And everything has to be dead nuts on. And we try to have a very small standard deviation in that velocity where I will often grab out of the box ammunition and it will be single digit standard deviation in velocity.
Wow.
From round to round. I'm not promising that with everything, but it's not uncommon now. So we are, again, coming back to that custom features at a production price, we see ourselves even with the ammunition loading that it's a boutique ammo loading. I mean, it's not like the big boys. You go tour a Federal or Remington or Winchester. Those are big operations. This is a pretty small operation, and so we really try to provide the quality there. But nothing is over.
Every once in a while, it's fun to go like just full-blown redneck on these fish.
This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
Is over SAMI spec on the pressures.
Okay. Well, a couple of things that I want to touch on that you just mentioned. One is the price of ammunition. Because it's a boutique line, is that why on average, you're looking at a much higher price for a box of Weatherby ammo?
Yeah. And I mean, just to be perfectly honest, we do the loading and we take a lot of pride in the loading, but we do not manufacture cases, bullets, primer, or powders, the four components. So in other words, I'm competing against large brands. If they're making the brass, well, guess what? Whoever's making my brass, which we have about two or three different sources, Well, they need to make a buck too. It's just how it works. So I'm sourcing those things. And so that is not something yet that we are doing in-house. And frankly, any of the custom loaders that would be out there would experience the same things. Now, you go to a plant like Federal, where they're making their bullets right there and they're making their cases right there, they're able to keep their costs down. But as I buy those cases, you know, that we have designed to our specifications, then obviously that's one of the parts of it. The other one is the length, you know, the time and precision. Every single box is packed in by hand. So even cosmetic seconds and dings and everything. So, you know, we also know that people expect. One of the great things I did is inherit a great legacy. One of the pains about it is people have very high expectations of our brand. It's a premium brand. They expect quality craftsmanship, perfect ammunition. So we don't take that lightly, but it means there's a little bit more cost into it, and there's a little bit more labor there to get what we provide.
Great, yeah. And then the other question I had about was, how do you select your bullets? I noticed just recently you started using hammer bullets, which I've, in the last 3 years, been experimenting with, and I'm really impressed. How did you find them, and how do you decide whether you're going to load a Scirocco bullet or a hammer or Barnes or anybody else's?
Sure. No, you know, it's interesting. During the COVID pandemic time, when there was such a shortage on ammunition supplies, we found ourselves not able to get a lot of bullets that we'd got for, in some cases, multiple decades, even 50 years. And we weren't able to get it for 12, 18, 24 months. We went, we got to provide our customers with ammo. They're depending on us for this. So we found ourselves talking to a lot of new suppliers, folks that we hadn't done things with. We're also loading Sierras now, the Tip Game Kings. We hadn't done that. We're doing a lot of different bullets. So Hammer's one of those. You know, they're up in Kalispell, Montana. We're out here in the West. They come up with a lathe-turned copper bullet designed for hunting. And I'm here to tell you that they are flat out the most accurate bullets that we've used in our line ever. So we found ourselves out of necessity going, we got to get bullets. Now, the problem is we said, well, they got to meet our velocity requirements. They got to meet our accuracy requirements. They have to be commercially loadable. In other words, some bullets just don't work well in automatic loading machines. Instead of, we don't load on a hand press, you know. We do our big Safari ones. We actually do, because the volumes are so low on our big Safari calibers. But anything 375 and below are on automatic machines. So there are a number of things that, and it needed to have the terminal performance and the penetration that we need at the velocities we need. So they have to tick a lot of boxes. So we found ourselves, for instance, the Hammer came out of that, the Swift Scirocco. We were unable to get, you know, frankly, our bonded bullets that we'd had for a lot of years and just couldn't get them. And Bill Hober down there is a good friend. And he started saying, Adam, these bullets are, you know, like, do you know Bill Hober, right? You know,
oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, Adam, these are damn good bullets. I'm telling you, best bonded bullet out there. And Bill would do his
That's
thing.
The guy.
And so I'd go, Bill, let me try them out. And, you know, they're down there in Kansas, and we had phenomenal results with the Scirocco. And so we started putting that in, but it really came out of necessity. But as a result, here we are post-pandemic with, I think, the best lineup of bullets that we've actually had.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed. I can remember back in the old days, you had fairly limited. And they were cup and core bullets, and occasionally you would load something a little beefier than that. But boy, these days I look at your choices and I go, I don't know, guys, we're kind of on the same page here, because I'm liking these same bullets. Been my experience with them.
We got burger in there too. We got a little different flavors. You'll have people that, you know, die by burger, people that hate it. You know, you have some of these, but our customers are diverse enough where we try to provide a little bit. You know, a little bit for everybody, as long as they meet those criteria that I mentioned.
Sure, sounds smart. Now, talking about cartridges and bullets and all, got to thinking, how many different Weatherby cartridges are there with the Weatherby name on them?
Shoot, is it 16 or 17, Ron?
can you run through them? Can you actually list them?
Yeah. I mean, I won't take in like 220 Swift and some of those, but I'm talking. And it's weird because we had a 375 Weatherby, but then we replaced it with the 378 Weatherby. But if you start at 224, which is its own case, which is kind of fun, but I mean, even its bolt face, again, not efficient at all, but it's fun, right?
Yeah.
The 240, which is on its own case, which is very similar case capacity to an odd six, on the 240. Then you have the 257 pairing case, which would be your 257, 270, and 7 millimeter, which would be like a 300 Weatherby in diameter, but shorter. Then you bump up to your 300 Weatherby case, which would have your 300 Weatherby, your 340 Weatherby, and your 6.5 300 Weatherby, which are all on there. Correct. Stop me if I miss something, Ron, off the top of my head here. So there's 8. Then you'd bump up to our you have the 375 Weatherby Magnum, which was kind of then replaced later by the 378 Weatherby Magnum, much larger case, obviously. Then on that 378, you have your 416 and your 460 Weatherby. So we're up to 12. Then in the late 90s, my dad launched the 378 down into the 3378. And the 338, 378, putting us at 14. Then you come up to the
340 Weatherby. Did you mention? I think you mentioned.
I did.
Missed the 340.
No, I think I hit the 340 on the. I thought I did on the 6.5 300, 300, and 340 because the same parent case. Then we come up to 6.5 RPM and 338 RPM, which would be 16.
Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah, you got the latest two in there, 338 RPM and a 6.5. Yep. You think you're going to make some more?
You know, it's funny. Even at the beginning, you said, you know, well, golly, why are you guys, you know, making stuff? And, you know, what's interesting is people go, well, why are you doing that? But here's the deal. If I got 300 Weatherby on order and it's a different cup size and all that, and there's cups over here that work for the RPM, I can make the RPM. It doesn't compete with that, if that makes sense. We're actually in the best stock of ammo that we've been in a long time. During COVID, the spike was so high, even within our line. You think, well, wait, people I thought were buying 9mm, you know, 5.56, and that's where all the stuff was going to. It's true, but we tend to follow even those political fear spikes or whatever up and down that tend to happen. And so people would go in and they used to buy two boxes of 300 Weatherby and that'd last them the year or two. Well, they went in and it was out. And so when they finally saw it, they bought a case of 10 boxes. So that happened. We ran out because, and in 21 or 22, we sold double the ammo that we did the year before. And we still didn't have everything in stock and customers were upset. And it's hard to crank things up like that, obviously. We've now stabilized, and we have, across the board, once in a while, there'll be a certain case that we're out of here and there. But across the board right now, you can look in those two new RPMs. There's multiple loads. You'll see inventory on our website. Most all of our staples. What is there? There's one right now. It might be the 270 Weatherby that's our toughest. But we'll be hopping out of that here in the next month or two. But your 257, you know, your staple Weatherby ones, we're doing better now to keep in stock the best that we possibly can. But
great. Now I want to ask you, what is the rarest Weatherby cartridge? I think you mentioned it earlier. Which one is the hardest to find, even in collectors? I don't think you actually make it anymore.
You're talking about the 220 Swift or the 375 Weatherby, pretty rare as well. But
yeah, I think that 220. Now that wasn't a straight up 220 Swift though. Your grandpa had a different name for it.
Or the Rocket. Pardon me, the Rocket. Yes. Rocket. The 220. Yeah.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
The Rocket. I misspoke earlier. Sorry about that. Yeah.
That's what I thought you were mentioning. And I thought that's got to be the rarest one because you almost never hear of it. Till you said it, I was thinking, oh, yeah, that's right. The Rocket. I knew it as a Rocket when I was a kid.
Yeah. And that's what he just loved, those fast, you know, moving things. Like even now, we have in the 257 some real lightweight hammers that we're screaming up at 3700, 3800 FPS. And, you know, I know the trendy thing is heavy, high BC bullets, fast twist rates, but we still really love to push a light bullet really fast and have fun with it. It's still a really good time.
Yeah, it is fun, and that does some remarkable things, which brings up the whole idea of hydrostatic shock. Your grandfather, of course, kind of started that, and he will always be known as the godfather of hydrostatic shock. What is your take on it? As a hunter, I've been aware of this all my life, and I'm kind of on the fence and all. I just always like to hear what people's educated opinions on hydrostatic shock are.
Sure. I do know this. Velocity can help. It can help, not cure, not anything, but it can help with an improperly placed shot. In other words, if I have more, I mean, it's velocity and mass equals your energy, right? And the more energy that you have moving in there, if you're slightly off, now I'm not talking about hitting them in the hoof or something, right? But I'm talking about if you're in the money zone, but maybe slightly out of it, I do know, like, you take one of those hammer bullets moving really fast. I have seen some devastating things happen, to the internal cavity that is there. I've seen a lot of animals just fall over dead really quick. Now, there's no replacement for a good, well-placed shot. And I'm not saying that at all. That is incredibly important. But I think you do have a lot of people now with the technology, especially on optics. And then you take, some very well-made bullets that are very accurate, some good bullets, and people aren't running the numbers through in their head to understand when they're hunting in a hunting scenario that just hitting the animal isn't enough. There are minimum velocities and energies that need to be hit in order for that bullet to actually perform. And so whether that's 1,200 foot-pounds energy and 1,800 FPS, different bullets are going to have different things. I do think there are some uneducated hunters out there that think just because I can hit it, because I have all this great technology and I'm a great shot, means that it's going to be an ethical shot. And I do believe that understanding your velocity and energy and how that bullet performs is very integral to making sure that animal does go down.
Yeah, good points. What you said earlier about shooting them in the hoof. This literally happened to me in your part of the world. I think it was in Wyoming on a guided pronghorn hunt. And the guide said, "Hey, what are you shooting?" And I said, "I've got a 25-06. He said, "Oh, God, that's perfect. That's perfect. They're so fast. You can hit them anywhere and you'll kill them instantly, even when you hit them in the hoof."
Right.
That's what we're up against.
Yeah, exactly. But there is something to be said that when that velocity hits and that energy is there, that it does some devastating things for sure. And I know that.
Yeah, and I've certainly noticed it. I just can't depend on it. I've had some shots where it was a perfect chest shot on a white tail and it falls dead instantly. And I thought, man, I must have hit it in the spine. And then when I do the post-mortem, it was just a chest shot. But for some reason, that hydrostatic shock killed it. I don't know if that's what did it or if you hit that nerve bundle that people talk about, the solar plexus, that's back in the gut, but there's one up closer to the shoulders, high shoulder shot. Is always great because it's so close to the spine, if not right on the spine. And then it also catches the tops of the lungs, I think, which is why it's so effective. But I just can't make up my mind if hydrostatic shock actually does as much as they claim. But boy, it sure can't hurt.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Now, Adam, in addition to running this company, I know you are doing quite a bit of hunting yourself. I've seen a few videos with you and your wife, Brenda, in them, and it sounds like she's quite a hunter, too. You guys, you're not just hopping on the back of some guy's truck and getting driven out to some field where they've got the big trophies waiting for you tied up. You're actually getting out there in the mud and the blood and the tears doing it, right?
Yeah, it's a passion of who we are. I mean, we often say that. I mean, we are at our core hunters, and to be out there just like my grandpa did in the 50s, taking all his Africa trips and testing cartridges and rifles and things on game. I use work as an excuse, but I love it. We love to be out there. Even here in Wyoming, I mean, we do a lot of DIY hunting just out in public land. Last year I took a biggest bull elk I've taken at 12,000 feet, elevation on public land. And so we do love to do that. We do a little bit of everything. I'm heading to Africa this weekend, so we still aren't far from that. Brenda got into it in about 2016, and she just all in. She went from being married to me for a long time. Well, I'm married into this. It's Adam's deal, and it's the rest of the family's deal, to We developed a women's rifle in 2016 named after my grandmother named the Camilla, and she was a part of that. And we venture into the backcountry. This last year, we were in the Yukon together. We were in the mountains of Montana. We did about 10 days in the backcountry there, spiking out and different things. So we, we love all kinds of hunting together. And, we also are a bit of the face of the brand. There's not a lot of multi-generational family brands left in our space. There are just a few of us left, and a lot have been sold off or gone public or bought by private equity or done different things. And so we do also recognize that it's important for us to be out there, to be using our product, to be enjoying the things that we do, enjoying God's creation and doing that. But at the same time, we'll make films, or I'll be out there with some of the partners or people we sponsor. And it's all also just good for our brand, for people to go, wait a minute, this is a product that the guy running the place over there is not just behind a desk, but him and his wife are out there like actively using this, maybe too much, but it's fun.
No such thing as too much hunting, my friend.
No, that's right.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that you and your wife are doing that sort of thing. And I love the idea that you're still a family company. Don't generally think of that when I think of Weatherby, but Hornady, Nosler, they're still, I think, family owned brands. There are a lot of our best brands in this country were family started and family owned for a long time. And it seems like those are the ones that seem to last the longest, make the best products and innovate. It seems like when they get bought up by some major conglomerate, they start to lose their way. And we've seen it happen with Remington and many other brands over the years. So more power to you guys for hanging in there. I don't suppose it can be easy as a small company. We tend to see a name like Weatherby and we think, well, they're this big rifle manufacturer, big company, but it's just mom and pop, really.
It is. And, till you've really ran a business or done something, whether you run a small business on Main Street or a family business like ours, it's, at the end of the day, you're responsible for it. And there's a whole lot of reward that comes with it. But I always say, like Spider-Man's uncle said, with great power comes great responsibility. And there is still there is still a whole lot of responsibility. There's liability. I mean, we're making, I often say we're making products where they're putting 60-something thousand PSI a few inches in front of their face. We're making these products. So it's a big responsibility. We have a lot of people that work for us, which is fun. We get to employ people and help put food on people's table, but it is a lot of responsibility. And at the end of the day, my wife and I aren't exempt from doing anything. At the end of the year, we had some things and updated a new computer system, and it was this crazy December. And we were down here with the shipping department last couple Saturdays of December, with our shipping department getting things out. So, everybody sees us out hunting or, thinks that we do everything, but it's still a family business. I know Hornady runs like that, and Nosler, the Hodgson family. There's still these businesses that are left, and it's fun. It's hard. Any of them will tell you it's hard, and that's why those that do sell out, people will, point fingers at them, but I go, hey, until you've been in their shoes and know what's behind those doors, you can't judge them, and I don't. And, I look at Remington, I look at a 200-year-old brand, and I look what happened to them, and I know it's sad, but you don't know the liability that was behind that. You don't know everything that took place. And So I tend to not point fingers, because when you've been in that leadership role, it's hard to do at other people.
Wow. So good attitude. Yeah. Well, Adam, I think you guys are doing just a remarkable job over there at Weatherby, and I want to commend you for it. And I want to commend you and your wife, Brenda, for being hunters, being active in the industry beyond just making products and selling them. I think it's important what you're doing. And I guess I could probably speak for hunters across the country, whether they've worked with and used Weatherby or not. We can all respect you as an all-American company, founded right here in America and making most of your products here in America, employing Americans and helping celebrate our freedoms as hunters and Second Amendment right gun owners. I think it just all comes together very nicely at Weatherby. I want to thank you for that.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate that. And we try to do our best in giving back, and conservation's a big part of it, or Second Amendment. There's a lot of things out there that I want to make sure that my kids and grandkids can enjoy this in the future too. And so we need to be just not takers, but givers also. And I hope that's what we're able to do here at Weatherby too. And I know, you and a lot of people in the industry, those of us that are passionate about it, need to make sure we're forward thinking as well. And I look at the legacy that my grandfather and father gave me and not just in the company, but I'm talking be able to have firearms to, you know, the right to bear arms. I'm talking about conservation, to be able to go out and hunt the animals that we do. Those are important things. Then there are threats against them. And I think we all need to be strong advocates for it too. And so Weatherby, we're not only passionate about firearms, but we're passionate about this being able to continue on for the years ahead.
Yeah. Great philosophy, Adam. Well, everyone, you've heard it here from the horse's mouth, so to speak. It's pretty impressive to have a third generation American company like Weatherby. I think we're lucky to have it here in this country, and it's a good example for all the rest of us to sort of live up to their whole philosophy, their attitude, their work ethic, and what we all get to reap as a reward of this. So, Adam, thanks for coming on and talking with us here at Ron Spoelmer Outdoors Podcast. I hope to see you down the road, preferably out in the field over a campfire with a hot barrel. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Let's do it, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Ron Spoelmer Outdoors Podcast. Until next time, keep the faith, hunt honest, and shoot straight.